Supervisor.
This is the Music Supercast.
It's in my interest, in ours perhaps, if we need to smoke a joint and calm down.
Hosted by Supergroup's Mary Prankster and lead music supervisor David Heyman. Recorded out of their Toronto and LA headquarters. Produced by Sorrel Sound and all vetted by me, Amani Sabri. Check out the Supercast blog at wearethesupergroup.com/MSC. And don't forget to share.
I think I got my swagger back.
Bored in the house and I'm in the house, boy. Bored in the house and I'm in the house, boy. Bored in the motherfucking house, bored. And I'm bored in the motherfucking house.
How's everyone doing? Hope everybody is good. I'm doing good. I'm staying positive. We're going to get out of this. I don't know when the fuck when. Don't look to me for answers. I'm here for music. I'm here for the goods. I think on this podcast, you're going to learn something. If you are pitching music, if you want to get your music into film and you want to do things differently, this podcast is with Assemble Sound in Detroit, our friends for years. We've been working with them, trying to get their music into shows. I've always adored what they do, mainly because of their authenticity. And the authenticity comes from truly being fans of musicians and artists being artists. We talk about giving artists the freedom and framework to work in the right sort of paradigm that, you know, jives with sync in film and television. It's a real conundrum to try and boil it down, but we do our best. We give some ins and outs. If you're looking to work with a sync agent, or you're wondering what a sync agent does, if you're wondering what folks do and how they get their stuff or that sound like original tracks into commercials and whatnot, these are the guys that do that. They do it really well. At Supergroup, we don't really do original music. We're all about licensing, so it's interesting to talk to somebody like this. And that somebody actually are two people, Nicole Churchill and Garrett Cooler. From Assemble Sound in Detroit. And Assemble Sound can be found at assemblesound.com, pretty easy, and at Assemble Sound on Instagram and Twitter. Some of the artists that they work with and we touch on, we've got Music Under Us by Curtis Roach, the legendary song that's sort of a taken off in TikTok land, the anthem of the coronavirus, I think, Bored at Home. That's the way it is, man. We've got White Rose Moxie that we talk about, Sam Austin's Moon Isles, Selly Island, again, hope I'm saying it right, Nige, the producer, one of the main producers that works out of there. He's been jamming with Sienna Liggins, who I love, Lex J, Mad Mad Nicks, Jake Lamont. There's a bunch of artists they represent. Go to their website, assemblesound.com, and check out what they're doing. But what really separates them is this church, this place that they have, this sanctuary. They bought up a church in Detroit and created an incubator system for artists to come in and have really done it. And, you know, the wow factor for me is someone inside the Canadian system. There is support. There are grants. There are incubators around that. But in the States, they don't have that. They're left to their own vices. And here they are, you know, somebody like Garrett and Nicole who've taken the torch and ran with it and given artists the space and time and warmth, you know, that incubator thing that they need to get things done, but more importantly, framework and an outlet to actually make money from their music. So big shouts to Chad from Sorrel Sound, who put this thing together. Despite the Skype Zoom action, you know, everything sounds a little funky in COVID pandemic situation podcast land, but Chad's our man. He's doing it right. And a big shout to Amani. Big shout to the Guild of Music Supervisors and Kaya, who put together the Guild one-on-one sessions. You can go to guildofmusicsupervisors.ca/121 and you can find all the info. If you can't find it, just go to guildofmusicsupervisors.ca and look to the top for one-to-one. Find the link, sign up. We're going to keep on doing them. I know they fill up fast because they're great. And I don't know. I diss Ozark in this show, which is fucking crazy because I actually got into it after this. I got over the cup holding and I love it. Season 3 ends with Run the Jewels. Fucking oola. If I'm going to recommend new music, it's definitely going to be Hani El Khatib, Stressy. Check it out in the show notes from Innovative Leisure. Can't wait for his new album. I've heard the whole thing. It's goodness, and I'm going to try and get him on the pod soon, but I'm not going to talk anymore. Without further ado, which my wife hates that term, I don't even know where it comes from, but without that ado, Assemble Sound on the Music Supercast. Dig in. Enjoy.
Tell me your story, guys. Tell me how this church adventure began and what was the impetus for this.
I want the genesis story of Assemble is always kind of interesting because we don't fit in any like typical bucket, right? Like we are a sync company, we are a supervision company, but we didn't really start as that. We do manage artists and do sort of the record label thing, but we didn't start as that. You know, we do a lot of sort of branded educational programming, but that's not really how it started. It really started with a pretty simple concept that was, I don't know if it was, I mean, it was definitely really naive. But
those are the best ones, man.
And brilliant in its naivete.
Yeah.
Essentially, we just wanted to open up a space in Detroit. Everyone who's listening to this knows that the history of music creation in Detroit is, you know, in some ways unparalleled. You know, it's got this incredibly rich history across every genre, and then, you know, it's created entirely new genres. One thing that a lot of people may not know is that the major music industry, so major labels, major publishers, major management companies, major booking agencies, none of them have a presence in Detroit. They have all pulled out of the city, starting in the 70s with Motown going to LA, and then all the way through the 2000s, you know, when the industry really started centralizing in LA, Nashville, you know, and New York. And Toronto, actually, like, I feel like there's a pretty big presence of the industry in Toronto.
Yeah. Whether it's self-serving or whatever, yeah. It's there.
So what happens when you don't have that, that sort of industry is you don't have the infrastructure that helps facilitate collaboration between artists, right? So you don't have the A&Rs, the managers who are taking producers and pairing them with writers and pairing them with artists and trying to get people out of their home studios or their, you know, their parents' basements or their garage practice spaces or whatever it is and working more collaboratively together. So the whole idea behind Assemble was, you know, Detroit's got all these amazing creators that all tend to be pretty siloed off. And we just wanted to try to create a space, a creative space, a studio space that facilitated collaboration, you know, mostly cross-genre collaboration rooted in songwriting, but a space where, you know, hip-hop producers and rappers, R&B singers, electronic producers, indie rock artists, pop writers kind of all worked under one roof. And the idea was kind of, we thought if we could have or create that space, there would be an exchange of creative knowledge and industry knowledge that helped everyone get better at what they were doing, helped everyone make better art, helped everyone understand the industry a little bit better and hopefully make some progress on the career side. So that was really the hypothesis. And it really, and it just kind of started with that very basic desire of like, we need a space. And I think what's so magic about Detroit that is different from other big cities is, you know, if you want a space like that in a place like Chicago, you got to have $1 million, $2 million set aside. And that wasn't the case in Detroit 5 years ago when we started this. Right. So we started
2015, time stamper.
Yeah, we Nicole and our partner Seth, we started meeting in 2014 to really kind of talk about this idea. And what essentially happened is Seth's a music producer. He kind of had always spearheaded this collaborative studio idea. And, you know, he thought maybe it'd be a nonprofit studio, but I really believed that if we really thought that this space could facilitate artist development, and help artists build careers, it would in some ways be hypocritical for us to have an organization that wasn't self-sustaining. So we needed to figure out a way to not only pay our bills, but help artists pay theirs.
Sure, it's not just about art, it's about getting it to the ears, which is a commerce thing. You got to teach the whole picture.
You know, that's kind of where we got connected with Nicole. Nicole was fresh off you'd been in LA for what, 6 years, Nicole?
Yeah, 6 years, exactly.
Yeah, so Nicole had been a music supervisor out in LA for about 6 years and then moved back to Detroit. And she was doing freelance supervision and freelance pitching. And we realized that we had been meeting with all these artists to talk about this space, and they all had these incredible back catalogs of music that they owned, you know, complete rights to, right, on both sides. Because, again, no big publishers, no big labels in Detroit. So you have all these independent catalogs.
Same with Toronto.
Yeah. And so what we realized is that there was a real advantage to pitching those sorts of catalogs for sync in a way that is a lot less it's a lot less complicated than getting catalogs from artists in a place like LA where there's a ton of publishing rights holders, maybe split masters. You know, you're always kind of dealing with publishers and labels, as opposed to what we could build, which was a catalog that represented entirely independent artists. We just rep them. We didn't assume, you know, publishing rights, didn't take master rights. And then we could connect those artists with content creators. And for us, you know, the obvious one was the Autos, who are here making, you know, spending millions of dollars on content to advertise cars every year. Sourcing almost none of that locally, so we thought maybe we could close that gap.
Right.
But we started building this catalog. You know, I mean, the quality of it was pretty undeniable. In the sense that, you know, it's Detroit.
Abracadabra, this shit is magic. Hey. Hoping you live in love, and I'm hoping you live in lavish. I hope you do with passion. I hope you do with love now. Start from the bottom, now we above. Now we've been on the climb.
And it's 2015, right? So people that are making stuff in their closet, it actually sounds pretty fucking good.
Exactly.
Very true.
So we started pitching this stuff to, you know, Nicole, the people that Nicole had worked with in LA, and they were just like, oh, holy shit, this is all, you know, you can clear this 100%. This is all real independent artists.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds amazing. And so we kind of... So as we're building out that sort of sync pitching infrastructure with Nicole...
Where did this direction of sync come from?
You know, it really came from... well, one, obviously, is Nicole having relationships in L.A. And then our other business partner, Seth, is a music producer who had a decent amount of success in sync just as an artist.
That window was open. You saw it.
Yeah. You're bringing in a lot of young artists who don't have touring careers yet. You know, they're not signed a major, they're not signed any sort of label or publisher. They're, you know, maybe putting out stuff with tens of thousands of streams, but they're at a very early point in their career. And, you know, the way to generate a significant amount of money to invest in your career at an early stage is really through sync.
It is.
There's not really another avenue.
Preach it.
So for us, it's sort of like, you know, it wasn't so much a genius concept as it was just the necessary.
It's pretty black and white. It's cut and dry. When you land a sync, you get a certain percentage. You know, a bulk of it goes right into the artist's pocket when they own their publishing and master, which is a blessed experience when you can call an artist up and do that.
No better feeling.
Yeah. What did you guys start taking a large percentage? Like, what is the nature? People ask me all the time, what does a sync agent take? Is it like 50%? Is it 25%? Or is it really based on how much legwork you do and case by case?
Nicole, you want to talk about where we started and where we're at there?
Yeah, I'm just laughing because it's still something that we kind of like joke about as we grow. So, you know, sync wasn't a familiar conversation amongst the artist community that we were initially approaching to work with. So there was a lot of like education involved, and there was a lot of, I think, like concern from the artist side. So I think we knew initially going in that we had to give a super artist-friendly split, but we also knew that our expenses and our operational costs were really low. So we were initially granting a 70-30 split off of just the sync fee, 70 to the artist, obviously, and then 30% to Assemble. Mm-hmm. And then we weren't taking any fee off of publishing royalties. So they kept 100% of their writing and their publishing money on the back end. Yeah, and we would just operate off of this like 30% cut. And about, I don't know, maybe a year in, we were like, as a business, struggling to like pay our internet bill. And so we were like, okay, we got to do something about this because 30% is not sustainable for the business. And this was prior to, you know, the artist development or the real like creative label services that we started to provide, which ended up generating different revenue streams for the company. So
is this before brick and mortar as well? Is this before church?
Yeah, this was just before. I think we were signing the paperwork and right. then also on the property, and then also, you know, signing these artists up for a sync representation deal. So about
to offer them up like this situation as well, which is going to cost a lot of money too. So they do gain some benefit by putting it back into the Assemble pot. I just want to point that out, that it's all circular, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was kind of like, we need to change 70-30 model to 60-40 because we need that extra 10% to be able to afford and provide a free space for the same artists to come and write and record and collaborate in. But what we did was we grandfathered all of the 70-30 artists into perpetuity. So if you came to Assemble as a sync artist after 2016, you're 60-40, but anybody prior to that is 70-30, and they will always stay that way. And there have been times when we're like looking down the barrel at a runway that, you know, we want to up everybody to 60-40. And I've like been pretty adamant about not letting anybody who is 70-30 go to 60-40.
Well, they're your original supporters. You cannot forget those original supporters. I will never forget mine. That's why we support Toronto a lot, because the community has a lot. You know, folks like Chad, he started with a dude that went to a London school and was in a band and whatnot. And now he's part of the whole supergroup Mosaic. So, you know, we get that. I think that's beautiful that you guys do that. I think those splits are so fair. And I think the fact that you are allowing the artists to keep their royalties and whatnot is important, because what we're talking about is not just career building. It's like a life mosaic. It's like how these people are going to sustain themselves for an entire lifetime. And the music you make in your youth and your prime is that stuff. And what you guys eat, you kill, or what you kill, you eat. So it's like you get there, you get the business. What I'm seeing now with Assemble is what we're also struggling with and doing right now, is when the intellectual property gets muddied with creation, and now you're doing tweaks, and because you have the means, you're now doing different mixes and adjusting and then doing the final mix. So it becomes a whole meal, but it also complicates things beautifully.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can speak to that at all.
Yeah, I think that, so one thing that's, you know, going back to sort of the beginning, sync was always such a central part of what we were doing, because it was really the engine in some ways. But the car, which is what everyone looks at and what everyone gets excited about, and what everyone sits in, was this church and this creative space. So, you know, in 2015, we bought this vacant church and literally just started inviting in these artists that we had been meeting with, and they would come in and help us put in electrical and plumbing and, you know, fix the roof and shovel bird shit out of the steeple. And
wow.
We built out these little studios.
Birds.
Yeah, we started, and so we had these four studios built, and most people assume, oh, you're a sync company, you must have been using the studios to create music for sync. But no, what we did is we started running this artist residency. So we gave, at any given point, there'd be 15 to 20 artists who'd have 24/7 access to the space, to come in whenever they want, bring in whoever they want, treat the studios like home studios, essentially, and use it all for free.
Wow.
So we didn't touch publishing, didn't touch masters. The only rule was, one, don't burn down the church.
Good one.
And two, you had to participate in this sort of community development programming we did. So we do, you know, bi-weekly song critiques, production tutorials, We had a and continue to have an, a free industry education panel series.
That's amazing.
So essentially just anything that brought those artists together and gave them the tools they needed to be better creators and better business owners.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird in a time now of isolation, but being amongst artists is important. But I think being in a space with other artists is even monumentally more important. You know, feeling like you're an artist and allowing yourself to be arty and, you know, evocative and emotive and all that stuff in a space, in a safe space. And that's what you guys have seemingly created.
There have been moments where the studios have been under construction, and what we found is that having artists in the space is, was the whole genesis, right? So it's the thing that gives us energy as a sync company, as a label, as a management company. And when we haven't had it, we've just, it's in some ways been kind of demoralizing, right?
Are you doing a virtual church?
We're working on it. It's been, it's definitely been a blow to us in that way. This the whole self-isolation quarantine thing. It's something we're trying to navigate pretty much every day. It's almost easier, as you guys have probably seen, as a company to operate remotely.
It is until eventually the shows will dry up because nobody's in production right now. So we'll see how that turns out down the road.
Yeah. I think that, there's obviously all the concerns considering the macro economics of all this. I think just from an organizational perspective, though, operating as a company, as a sync company, is easier remotely than like running a creative community. So that's one thing that we've been just trying to figure out, is essentially how we stay engaged with all the artists who 2 weeks ago were working out of our studio space.
What is the producer house specifically?
Oh, the program that we did.
I mean, some of those programs seem fantastic, and they almost do seem like we could be sharing files, we could be sharing ideas, flipping samples back and forth. I think that's the idea of producer house, is getting people from different genres together and trading off things. Maybe you can explain it better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, that's always been the ethos of the church, right? Is like how, you know, a rule that I didn't say before when we first started this residency program in the studios was the doors had to stay open. Essentially, anyone could come in your session. And the whole point was like, yeah, you might be a rapper and you might walk into a session for a house producer and you're going to learn something about drum mixing that you would never learn sitting in a room with hip hop producers all day, right? Because there's a sort of a different take on drum production in house music than there is in hip hop. So we always sort of have had this creative exchange model. And I think that right now what we're trying to figure out is how that happens digitally in a way that isn't just about like sending stems, right? Because like people have been able to send stems digitally for a long time now. And I think that what the studio residency and what Assemble Sound does really effectively is it builds a relationship in that process. And that is where most of the value in collaboration comes. It's not about like the stems you get. It's about sort of the relationships that you build. And having an in-person space to do that is just so much more effective. So I think for us right now, we're trying to figure out how to do digital collaboration in a way that, helps artists continue to build those real relationships with people.
Absolutely. I think it's up to people like us to create frames that artists can work in. And I know artists don't like to be constrained, but I think it's important to have direction and themes and a kind of a place to work. I know it doesn't have to be a church, but it can be a place, can be a pocket, like a film, a thematic, you know, core, or some mission that you're doing for a hospital or something social that's going on. There's only so long, you know, you can make your own stuff. It's about sustainability and networking during this time and keeping that going. For me, you have a great network at your fingertips to do that kind of stuff. So it's quite exciting.
I think what's really interesting is, again, going back to this relationship between sort of sync, creative community, facilitating collaboration. Like, one of the things that we did even yesterday, we had a digital song review, and we were trying to figure out how to get some artists who don't normally collaborate to collaborate more. And what Nicole did was Nicole wrote Think Briefs, and then she handed them to our residency program director, who looked at briefs, looked at our pool of artists in residence, and just started pairing them up and saying, you four artists are going to work on this brief. And then, you know, that's something that they can do kind of remotely because they're all working from the same sort of brief, sending things back and forth. And then, you know, last night we got on a call and reviewed them and gave everyone feedback on the songs they wrote to brief. So I think, like, you need, like, you use the word, I think, framework. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that's where people like us come in. It's how do you just create a little bit of structure so that artists can keep working in a productive, inspiring, or inspired way. And most people don't think about sync as an engine for creativity, right? They see it as an engine for commerce. But a lot of the artists we work with, you know, turn to sync and writing to brief and the sort of, you know, that process as a way to get through writer's block, create new relationships with other artists who they wouldn't normally collaborate with.
If you have writer's block, I recommend watching Tiger King, and that will cure you of everything.
Man, I'm on the Ozark binge right now.
Oh, really? I'm having a tough time with Ozark. I can't get through Jason Bateman, man. There's something about,
really?
Yeah, I'm on season 2, episode 2, and like something about the way that like the ladies hold their cups with two hands and the way that Jason Bateman just looks like a flick. Like I just want to beat him up. I don't get it. Something has to happen. Something, tell me something good happens. Like apparently season 3, episode 1 is the craziest thing ever. So I'm trying to get to that point.
Yeah, I would hang in, although I was definitely hooked by season 2. So if you're not hooked by now, that the two-handed coffee cup holding might be just too much.
Might not be your
That's why I couldn't watch Big Little Lies or whatever, because there was so much just mug holding and sipping. Could not handle it. Right on. So let's have some fun here. I really want to hear about some, I don't want to say favorite artists because that's a weird thing to say, but who's popping right now? I mentioned White Moxie. This kid's 17 years old and he's killing it. Or I mean, the material's killing it. He's got like 2 million views.
Yeah.
One sync could change everything. This guy's got it. Tell me about White Moxie, White Rose Moxie.
Yeah, White Rose Moxie. Actually, it's funny that this, again, this is about sync and the development side kind of working hand in hand. Nicole sent me White Rose, I don't know, maybe 8 months ago. And was like, have you heard of this kid? And I was like, no, I haven't. And then maybe 2 months later, our marketing director sent it to me. He was like, hey, have you heard of this kid? I was like, and it's weird when we find an artist in Detroit that none of us are really following, none of our friends are following. And I started doing the deep dive and I was like, oh, the reason we haven't heard of him is because he's in high school, so he hasn't kind of popped into the scene
yet. Might get arrested, right? If you approach him.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
He finally, like, I just got hooked on the music and we set up a meeting and brought him in and we were just so blown away by his creative vision and, you know, everything he was doing at the time. He had never even been, this is in November, we're talking like 5 months ago, 4 months
fresh.
Ago. He had never been in a studio before or worked with a real producer. He had just been pulling beats off YouTube and recording them in his basement. Yeah, we just started setting up sessions for him.
Setting up frames.
Exactly. Just a little a little bit of structure, and we knew that with a little bit of structure with him, he was already so talented, it would just take off pretty quickly. And that's what we've seen. I mean, we put him in a room with the first producer, and you know, 3 months later they released a 15 song project together.
I don't like emotion. It's cupped on shot but calling. This shit got too open. It is life where I start to face it.
Fuck, man. It's beautiful. It's definitely been bucketed for Utopia Falls. Not only because it's good, though, I must say, but because you provided instrumentals, acapellas. I could have things echoing out in other rooms. I can have a guy like me who edits and gets into the mix. I could have a lot of fun with those records, you know? Sienna Liggins. Who wants to talk about her? Because she's fire, man. I mean, her stuff was produced by two of the in-house producers, I believe, right? Bootleg Diplo and Sibling with The Wise. Tell me about her stuff. I'm enamored with her.
So Sienna, her and Nigel, what do we call him?
Bootleg Diplo, Nigel. Yeah.
Bootleg Diplo, yeah. I mean, what's so funny is you can actually now, since this whole quarantine thing happened, Nigel started a Twitch channel, and he's been working on Sienna's project with her on Twitch in public for everyone to just watch, which has actually been an amazing thing to watch. But yeah, Sienna's just another artist we brought into the space maybe 2 years ago, and we brought her in as a writer. So she hadn't released any music as an artist. But I think she was one of the ones who got brought through by another artist and literally, I think, just started singing to me on the spot. And it was like, you know, sometimes you hear about that and you're like, that sounds terrible.
And awkward.
And it was just one of those moments where I was like, oh, shit, this is actually really good.
Pick your job, the floor.
Yeah, so she came in as a writer. And about 6 months into working out of the studio, you know, she had been writing for other people, and she had started working with Nigel on her own stuff and started playing us that. And I think with her, the music from the jump, the first song she released that we helped her release was Flower Bomb, which is honestly a hit record. Like that, it still is nowhere near where it should be. It's such a good song. Got your dress up, hair down, flower bomb from last night on you and me. Low-key, good love, come get you some. What we really saw even more than the songs, I think, was such a strong artist vision for who she wanted to be, the type of people she wanted to talk to, how she wanted to make them feel. Like, it was, her artist vision was maybe more clear than anyone we'd worked with previously. And for us, that's kind of where we started with her, was like, how do we cultivate, turn that vision into a really potent brand that cuts through? And obviously music is a huge part of that, but so are visuals, so is design, so is photography, social media presence. So we kind of really started with her on that side, the design, the visuals, and let her and Nigel just keep doing their thing because they don't need much help.
Yeah, they definitely don't. I mean, there's definitely a depth of personality there. I hope Kaya's listening and gets that stuff for Ginny and Georgia. You know, strong female characters, young. I think that she's the kind of person that I personally want my daughter to listen to and be inspired by. But she's on TikTok all the time. Actually, you have a TikTok madness thing going on. What's going on with Curtis Roach? This guy just found out about it. It's awesome.
Okay, I'm bored in a house and I'm in a house bored. Bored in a house and I'm in a house bored. Bored in a motherfucker in a house bored. And I'm bored in a motherfucker in a house bored.
Curtis Roach. Talk about it. Man, the youth. We all got to be paying attention to the youth more in the sync world. Curtis, 20-year-old dude. A kid that, you know, we've been just loving on as much as possible since he was in high school. He's just like the most full of joy and love and always kind of down to try to make people laugh and feel better about themselves. That's kind of his whole vibe.
It's a great place to be.
It makes incredible music.
Yeah.
And, you know, right at the beginning of the quarantine, he's sitting at home on TikTok. He's pretty funny on TikTok. and recorded this Bored in the House song, literally beating his hand against the table and just singing that hook over it. And it very organically caught fire. There was, I mean, I'm close with Curtis's team, and I can tell you there was no sort of label putting $100,000 into a TikTok campaign behind the scenes. That was completely organic.
Just organic, loving him being himself, you know, just being honest. It's great, man. 12 million views at least at this point. Probably by the time people are listening to it, it's doubled at least.
Yeah, I mean, he just dropped a song with Tyga. Like, what is that? Two nights ago, Tyga jumped on a remix, and that happened because Tyga reposted the song, and they ended up DMing with each other. And, you know, Dylan Francis did a remix. It's, you know, it's been posted up now by, like, Janet Jackson, Chance the Rapper. I think Kylie Jenner just mentioned it. Like, it's just gone. It's taken on a life of its own.
I'm so fucking bored.
That's truly amazing. You guys have done some other things for the COVID relief. I saw you did a special Google Doc just for artists that are in the Detroit area. We did the same kind of thing for Toronto area. Where can people find that?
Yeah, so it's, I wish I had a more direct way, or I guess this is pretty direct. It's just sometimes I hate when people do this, but if you go to Assemble Sound on Instagram, and then just a link in our bio, that's the way to do it.
We'll put a link as well in the show notes. I also wanted to touch on the non-hip-hop artists. I mean, Jake is really impressive. His stuff I put into folders for shows like Northern Rescue. It's got that, like, Northern Canadiana vibe. End of Show for Drama. Jake LeMond, I'm talking about. You have, you know, indie artists, some singer-songwriters. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, we, you know, obviously, like, hip-hop and rap is a staple in Detroit, and we're lucky to be able to work with a lot of, like, the up-and-comers in that genre, but there are a ton of other genres that that we love supporting, and Jake is a great example. There's I believe Jake, as well as Sienna, they all went to the Detroit Institute of Music Education, which is a newer music school in downtown Detroit. So we discovered Jake because of Dime. Him, along with people like, there's a gentleman named Ben Collins. There's a duo that go by Brian and Steve. There's a bunch of people that we tap for licensing or will take their music and rep it for Sync, but also they make for really, really great custom songwriters for Sync as well. So people like Jake have been really fun to work with because we've been able to kind of, show him the ropes a little bit about writing to Brief and writing to Sync, and then watch as, you know, he finds success, especially in the trailer world, doing that kind of stuff. So it's just been fun to kind of, like, give these artists an interesting opportunity that they wouldn't have probably otherwise gotten just by putting music out on YouTube or on Spotify.
It carries the whole vibe of everything you do. And I think, you know, when it comes to hip hop bleeding into folk and all sorts of things, we've seen Post Malone do that. We're seeing, like, you know, the latest releases, I guess, like Mac Miller going really, really less is more, almost Detroit Motown-y vibe, a song like Circles, you know. I think it's a beautiful thing, and when I see something like the Greater Alexander performance, which we'll put a show note up to as well, which is a piano performance, and I think those kind of things, you know, not only speak to the cinematic community, but really it's also still hip hop. You know, it's absolutely got hip hop in its core. And I love that everything about Detroit has a feel to me. It feels a lot like Toronto. Can you speak to that feel, like something in the air? I don't know. There seems to be a sense of redemption in all of these songs.
Yeah, I think it's, Man, it's really interesting. I remember, I don't know if you're familiar with the band Death. There are a lot of people think of Death as like the godfathers of punk music. I was once interviewing them for a show, and like before a show that we did with them, like a concert, and they said something that was that really stuck with me, because they were talking about the sort of history of music across every genre in Detroit, and they said something to the extent of like there's just something in the water or the pulse of the machinery in the city that is that just gives birth to this music that I don't know what it is, right? There's probably a 2-hour conversation we could have about the cultural history of the city, the economic history of the city.
Of course. It's a whole fucking, trust me, I'm in it, man. We're doing playlisting for a cannabis store in Detroit that I won't name. But it's really been a huge disconnect to me from the original brief where we were like, oh, let's make this Detroit. Let's make this the sound of the city to, you know, Portugal the Man and NSYNC. So, you know, soccer moms can buy their fucking hash. And I love that. Yeah. And I want that. And I hope soccer moms everywhere are hitting the bong and listening to the music supercast. And, but it's still clearly like the weed is legal in Canada as well, but we know not, you know, nobody that knows anything goes to a shop. Is there a gentrification happening? And, you know, why isn't music part of it? Because I feel like they're pushing out the actual street vibe for this true gentrification, this pop gentrification. Maybe you are seeing that like Walmart culture peak its way back into Detroit. But I had always thought of Detroit as a place that was free of that a bit.
It's a deep question. I think that the street culture still rules Detroit. I would argue is always going to rule Detroit musically, culturally. You know, it's like you look at the things that are popping right now, and, you know, I think about Sada Baby, I think about TJ Six, I think about Baby Smooth, I think about Cash Doll, I think about 42 Doll. I mean, there's so much coming from the street culture in Detroit that really kind of creates like a cultural foundation. Detroit is a very far or long ways off from a development perspective of gentrifying or displacing that. And frankly, I don't think it's, in some ways it's too, the good news is it's too strong. Like that's the cultural history of this city. And I don't think we're at a place where people are concerned about that getting displaced. I do think that, like, obviously gentrification is happening in Detroit, physical displacement, physical gentrification, and obviously there is cultural displacement, cultural gentrification that comes with that. But man, the roots are really deep in this city, and it's a black city, and the music here is, you know, predominantly black music. And that's been at the core of the cultural identity of this place, and is going to be, you know, I think probably forever. And it's an amazing thing to witness and be a part of and support. So, yeah, I think that, you know, there is obviously a very sensitive and serious conversation to be had about gentrification, but I think that it would be mistaken to not acknowledge the strength of the streets in the city, because it still is what rules here. My Isaac Hayes bumping Isaac Hayes, who that young kid with old souls lost in time and space. I rewind the tape and play my CD still, maybe because I like the way that my CDs feel. And when that vinyl spins, I feel like I'm in Gladys Knight and Pimp Studio, riding in that soul train, getting funky and groovy. Yo, super fly soundtrack, wishing to get that sound back when it was just all love and then it sound whack. Polaroid Floyd Walkmans to avoid on them blind jobs, turkeys talking nothing, making noise. Even in Detroit where the sun don't show, this old soul still glows when this young one grows. So let them know. So how you cracking those car companies?
with the street music. So that's what I'm saying. There's a disconnect, you know? How is it going? Are you able to, you know, get local artists into advertisements and whatnot?
I can let Nicole, you want to speak to that a little bit, and then I can kind of speak to it at a higher level.
I think that's sort of like an ongoing, I don't want to say challenge because we've found a bit of success in it, but I think it's like an ongoing sort of like priority to us. You know, we've seen a bit of success in it. And I think what helps a lot is that we kind of stay in our lane as far as working with actually local artists, which helps a lot because you have the car and the auto advertisers in our backyard as well as the artists in the backyard too. So you have an opportunity to kind of create that connection organically by, you know, we try to bring as many clients as we can to local shows. And, you know, we've done the showcase thing and we try to do, put a lot of our efforts into bridging that gap a bit to kind of create sort of like a familiarity between artist and client, kind of like personalize it and humanize it a little bit on both sides. And I think that's something that we're going to continue to grow into, especially, you know, our space, that church space is such a terrific vehicle for that. And so once it's done, you know, we'll have a beautiful, you know, theater that we can bring people into and actually host our own showcases. I think things like that make a big impact for us.
Yeah, it's a slow burn, isn't it? It's something that you have to keep planting those seeds, keep, you know, showing the clients, opening the door for them and hoping that the ones that get it become the decision makers. It's a patience thing. And we're in a long game that a lot of artists don't understand. But I love that you just laid it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's a stigma sometimes on the client side that like only good music for sync can be made in major music markets. And I think that we really put a lot of effort into, you know, disproving that thought.
God bless. I mean, we're trying to disprove that every day. So we're, yeah, you know, fellow warriors on the battlefield. Absolutely,
yeah.
Guys. This was really interesting. I think everything you guys are up to is, you know, it's really tight, obviously, creatively. I think what's next is always exciting. And I do love scenes. I think the one thing that, you know, a music supervisor truly loves with the sync agency is somebody that stands for something, whether that's a mission statement or of a place. And you guys are of a place, and that place has a sound, it has a soul. It's a soul I love. So thanks for being on the Music Supercast, guys. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for having us so much. This is great.
The Music Supercast is a production of Surround Sound and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.